The Here podcast is all about reclaiming your power and reconnecting with your mind and body. By releasing our stories and the power they have had over our lives, and creating a compassionate and supportive community, we can bring love, understanding, awareness, and healing to ourselves and to all who need it most. Join me in saying, enough is enough. I own my power. I am ready for the next chapter of my life, and it will be the most amazing one yet. Well, hello, hello, and welcome back to an episode of Here Podcast. My name is Felicia Connor, and today I have an amazing guest, a lovely guest. I'm very excited. Her name is Judy Thurson, and she is a health and wellness coach, speaker, and best-selling author of Beautiful Tragedy. She has an amazing story of the different things that she has experienced that brought her to what she's doing today, which is really taking her stories, like we talk about often, and using them to help others and to help change the world. So thank you so much, Judy, for being on the show today.
Thank you for having me. Such an honor to be here.
Oh, I'm so excited. Well, I would love to start with whatever you would like to share about your stories and the things that helped shape you and kind of pave your path to what you're doing today, which is really trying to help other people in their life and live their best lives. And so I would love to open the floor for you to share.
Great. I know we've talked in the past and I have like 9 lives that I could share about, but I think for now, I just want to share the most recent kind of lessons and things that I've been going through. And I'll start with the summer of 2019, June of 2019. So my husband and I are sitting at the dining room table. It's about 9:30 in the morning. And I had just developed and created this new meditation mindfulness practice that was rocking my world. It was kind of the missing link, you know, like you said, I've been a health and wellness coach. I've been doing grief work with people, you know, for the last probably 17 years. And I felt like this meditation practice was the thing that I was missing. And I wanted to share it with the world because it was so transforming my life. And I remember looking over at him and I said, you know, I'm a little apprehensive because every time I try to embark on something like this, launch something bad happens to Jacob. And Jacob at the time was our 18-year-old son. And for the last couple of years, he had been battling, you know, mental health issues, substance abuse issues, addictions, different things. And we were in a, you know, peaceful season of our lives. Everything was fine. But there was just this mother's instinct in me that just said, you know, I'm just a little bit afraid that if I really go full out doing something that I want to do, that something bad will happen to him. And my husband looked over at me and he says, not this time. He says, nothing's going to happen. This is your thing. You know, I'm going to help you launch this thing and nothing is going to derail this for you. That was his words. Nothing's going to derail this for you. So I said, okay. And he went off to work. And about more than an hour later, about 10:45, I get a phone call from Jacob's girlfriend saying he was found unresponsive and he was getting rushed to the emergency room. And so here I was, little did I know that the very thing I was getting ready to launch into the world ended up being the very tools that I needed to get me through my dark soul, you know, night of the soul season of my life, which is, you know, the unimaginable for any parent. At that point, we had no idea kind of the severity of the situation. All we knew is that the doctor said, you know, you guys should just get here now. We were living in Arizona and Jacob was in Los Angeles. And so we packed everybody up and drove 6 hours to get there. And so I pretty much used these tools on myself. And this is what really saved me during that time. And I would love to share it with you and the audience. It's called the GIVE principle. GIVE is an acronym. And before I share what the acronym stands for, GIVE is such a special thing that if you are in the midst of chaos, when you're in the midst of grief and loss, when you're in the midst of anxiety or depression or any kind of just tumultuous time in life, the last thing you want to do is give to yourself or give to anybody else for that matter. But I really just saw such a huge need to make sure that I was pouring into myself first so that I can be strong for Jacob, so that I can be strong for my family and anybody else that was around me. And so this practice, this meditation mindfulness practice that I kind of formulated, I mean, there's no right or wrong way to meditate, right? I've been meditating for the last 30 years, but for me, this was finally, it gave me a framework. And it's, I always think it's like meditation for dummies or meditation for people who hate meditating, or, you know, like it just was kind of a easy, foolproof way to have guidelines. And so GIVE is an acronym, and G stands for grounding. And in the moment of grief, in the moment of chaos, because I have experienced a lot of trauma in my past, I'm very good at disassociating. I'm very good at running away from everything. I'm really good at numbing out and just, you know, distracting myself. And so this part of the practice of grounding was so necessary for me because it helped me to be really present. And it helped me to be very clear on what was in front of me and finding that gratitude in what was in front of me. Again, especially in a situation where my son's in the hospital for an apparent drug overdose, it would have been so easy for me to be in the past of, oh my gosh, you know, woulda, shoulda, coulda, and guilt and fear and all kinds of stuff of things that I really have zero control over changing. Or I can be in the future of anxiety of, oh my gosh, what's going to happen? And I can't lose him. I can't imagine my life without him. Like this can't be, right? So you're either in these two places in the midst of chaos and in turmoil and uncertainty. So the grounding process helped me to be very present and to be like, you know what? I can't control the past. I can't control the future. All I have is what is in front of me. And I'll tell you that those 2 weeks of Jacob being in the hospital in a coma, he never regained consciousness. But those 2 weeks were a total gift because we were able to be present with him. We were able to communicate with him, you know, whether he heard us or not. It's not the point, right? It's about us being able to communicate because grief is really undelivered communication of an emotional nature, right? And so when you think about a lot of times when people have grief, it's because of all the things that were unsaid or all the things that they wish they didn't never said, or, you know, there's all these regrets. And so for 2 weeks, our family, again, as a grief coach, you know, our family, this is kind of how we live, is that you deliver your communication, you share what you need to share so that you don't leave anything unsaid. And so those 2 weeks were so precious because every single one of us were able to have that one-on-one with Jacob and really connect with him and share our hearts with him. So that's G, that's the grounding part.
Grounding. And is the grounding really just acknowledging that I cannot be in the past, I cannot be in the future, I'm just right now?
Right.
Okay.
Right. What's in front of me right here, right now? I stands for intention. And intention is getting you out of your default brain into your active brain, right? So our default, if you're anything like me, most people's default is negativity and worst case scenario. So the intention is every single day I would ask for a word, and that is the word that I would just meditate on and think about all day and just ruminate and marinate and just be actively thinking about this word. So some days it was just surrender. Some days it was hope. Some days it was forgiveness. So it's really cool because I journaled through this process from the moment that we got the phone call on June 13th, every single day I journaled all the intentions that I meditated on for the day, never intending to write a book, never intending to do anything with it other than I just was keeping a journal. And when I wrote my book, every single chapter in the book are all the intentions of that day.
Oh, beautiful.
So it's really cool. And I'm so glad that I did because it was fresh on my mind and it's very raw and unfiltered. It was like, I mean, there was one intention of just being angry and just allowing myself to be angry and just be real with my feelings. And so intention is a very important part of the practice because it keeps your brain in the active stage of thought instead of the default part. V stands for visualization. And visualization is so powerful because every day we visualized Jacob waking up. We visualized him waking up without any brain damage. Once we talked to the doctors, they said he could have been out of oxygen to the brain for up to 40 minutes, which is miracle in itself that he was in the emergency room. But we had just this practice of visualizing him being okay. And so most people are probably thinking, well, wow, Judy, that didn't really work out for you, did it? But the thing is that the human spirit is so powerful and so strong, because that visualization is really hope. That's tangibly what hope is, that you're hoping for a different outcome. You're hoping for a different tomorrow, you know? And I study a lot of Holocaust survivors and read a lot of books, and the people that have escaped concentration camps, every single one of them that has been interviewed, they ask them, what was it kept you going? How were you able to survive what you survived? And every single one of them talked about their visualization practice of being able to come home to see their wife and smell the bacon, or not bacon, but smell the breakfast that she's making, yeah, and be able to hug their kids. And even if, like, logically they knew that that everybody was killed, like, just them hanging on to this vision of what their family could be once they got out, like, that's what helped them to survive. So in the same way, even though the prognosis was super grim and every time the doctors came in, they gave us bad news, bad news, bad news, that visualization really helped keep us hopeful and kept our spirits alive.
Oh, I love that, because visualization is one of my favorite things to do. I do it every single night. Every night when I lay down, I'm visualizing so I could smell it, feel it, everything, mm-hmm, whatever it is, mm-hmm, that I want to manifest. Mm-hmm. But how you're framing it as well is, so for that tool to help you build your future, reach your goals, whatever that is. And also, though, when it doesn't turn out the way that maybe you're hoping for in your visualizations, is helping you to survive that moment, to stay
100%. Yes. Yeah, it's a survival skill, 100%. Because what's the opposite of that? Total despair, right? Yeah. Worst case scenario. I mean, falling apart. And I did that too. But at least for 15 minutes while I'm in my meditation, I'm able to really connect with that vision of Jacob being healed, right?
Yeah.
And then lastly, E stands for expressing gratitude. And I love this. Gratitude is, we know now, science supports that gratitude rewires the brain. And there are other studies that talk about expressing gratitude changes, like, the atmosphere in the room. It changes the tone, the mood, you know, the attitude. And when we were in the hospital, we were in the ICU for 2 weeks. And, you know, ICU is where death happens. When you go in there, you can just feel the despair, right? The doctors, the nurses, everyone's in high alert. Everyone's just, you know, it's not a happy place to be. And when we were there, my husband was such a great example of this and just expressing his gratitude. I mean, he knew every receptionist's name, every specialist, every nurse, and he was asking them how they're doing and he's encouraging other people. And I'm like, how can you do that right now? You know, but he was such a great example of that. And we really tried to have that same spirit in the room of just taking care. I mean, there are other families there waiting for their loved ones, and we're sharing food with everyone in the lobby. I'm actually doing meditation in the lobby with everyone.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, I mean, it was a very surreal experience. And at the end, you know, Jacob ended up passing on June 27th. I mean, nurses and staff were coming up to us in tears. They're just like, you know, this is where death happens and you guys brought life. They're like, we've never experienced anything like this. And, you know, it was really beautiful and just grateful that we got to, even in the worst of times, find beauty in the tragedy, hence the name of the book, Beautiful Tragedy. And I chronicle everything in that book. And it's very unfiltered because I share just kind of in the moment what's happening. And what I love about that is, now you're seeing not just like a book on how to grieve and a book on how to build resilience. And it's not like just this textbook from a professional, oh, here's what you should do. But it's really me working through the things that I coach people to do and showing you and modeling you, like, oh my gosh, this is what that looks like in real time. This is what that looks like to fall apart and to break down. And there's nothing wrong with that. Like, you should. How many times do we hear, oh, stay strong for everyone. Oh, you know, if you're going to cry, go cry in your room, go cry alone. So we don't ever get to model this kind of grief because we're so ill-equipped. And it's so awkward. Nobody wants to talk about it. And it's just this kind of this foreign thing. And the things that we do talk about, there's so much misinformation. Like, how many of us have ever heard of like the 5 stages of grief? Have you heard that?
Yes, I've heard of it. Yes.
And so most people don't know. And even like therapists, even like professionals, most people don't know. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, who wrote that, she wrote that those 5 stages for the dying. She wrote that for people that were terminally ill. She didn't write that for the grievers, for the people that were going to stay behind.
Oh, wow.
Right?
Yeah.
But she wrote that so long ago. And back then, there really weren't any tools for the grievers. And so it just became this kind of universal, okay, this is for all the grievers. The problem with that is it teaches you, okay, there's these 5 stages, right? And it kind of wraps it up into a little pretty bow. Okay, if you do this, then you're going to go here, and you're going to go here, and you're going to bargain, and you're going to, you know, have that anger, and then you're going to have this resolve, and then everyone lives happily ever after. Well, if you've ever experienced any kind of grief, you know that you can't tie up grief in a pretty little bow. There's no really 5 stages because it can be any time. You can feel anything at any time. The grief can come at any time when you think, oh, I'm resolved, I'm feeling happy, I'm peaceful now. Next thing you know, the next day it comes, you know, the big wave comes again. And so there's no right or wrong way to grieve. There's no easy little 5 steps. It's just you being human and allowing yourself to feel wholeheartedly what you're feeling in the moment.
Yes.
And so I love to share my passion about that because as someone who does this professionally and also someone who's experienced such deep grief, I see there's such a need of equipping and helping people to process and people to know how to help people who are grieving as well.
Oh, yes.
So, yeah, I mean, it as tragic as the situation has been, you know, losing my son, it has also been a very, I guess, beautiful experience as well to see just how much impact Jacob made. He was an artist. He was a recording artist. He had just gotten signed to Atlantic Records and he was living in LA and, you know, super talented, just amazing young man. And what we didn't know after he passed and we kind of combed through all his messages and text messages and social media just to try to get some answers, right? And what we didn't know is he was such an empath and he was carrying on so much pain from people. He was helping people who were struggling with addiction. He was helping people who were struggling with suicide. And he was helping people that were coming out of, you know, mental institutions. And he was just encouraging people from all over the world. And he was 18 years old. And so again, back to the give principle, I realized, you know, here I am, I'm way older. I'm in my 50s and I've been doing this my whole life. And I know how hard it is to take on other people's pain like that. And I have to equip myself to be able to be strong enough to handle those kinds of information. And here, Jacob was 18 and he didn't have the tools to do that. He didn't have the tools to give back to himself so that he can pour out from his overflow, not from his empty cup, right?
Yeah.
And so again, that he really inspired the give principle because it really helped me to see, especially people struggling with addiction, substance abuse, mental, you know, health issues, you really have to put yourself first and really take care of yourself and have that self-care practice. So I'm very proud of the book. I'm very proud of the give principle. You know, it's one thing when you use a tool for yourself and it works. And you're just like, okay, this is kind of my cool little thing in between my head, you know. But all of last year, I was hosting workshops where I was meditating daily with people and giving them these tools. And the transformation that people had doing this practice was unbelievable. I mean, I had one client who for the last 15 years had to take an Ambien every single night because of her anxiety. And once she started practicing the GIVE principle, she texted me right away. She's like, Judy, I have not slept without a sleeping pill for 15 years. And after, you know, I started doing your meditation, I'm like finally going to sleep without a sleeping pill. And she was so shocked. And I had another woman that was in the hospital. And, you know, during COVID, she couldn't be there with her loved ones. She's by herself. She was so afraid. Her mom had passed of breast cancer at 42. She was now 42 going in for her own breast cancer diagnosis. So, and had to do it alone. And she emailed me. She's like, man, I did the GIVE principle. And it really just helped me to stay present in the moment and not freak out. And so there's so many great stories like that of people who've actually used the practice and how it's helped them. And that just really makes me happy and helps me to, inspires me to continue to give to others because, you know, we just need that right now more than ever, right?
Yes, 100%. Wow, that is, and imagine all of the people that were in the hospital with you and being able to have, because they were going through their own grief and worry and anxiety and you leading those meditations with them. And what a gift for them, because I've never seen that ever in all the hospitals I've been in. That was such an amazing gift. This is so true about self-care. You have to fill up your own cup before you can give to other people. And when I first started this podcast last year, I just launched right into it. I wanted to do this and everyone was sharing their stories with me. And I was so grateful in these beautiful stories. And after every story, I felt so depleted in my own, because I could have been that I was going through some of my own stuff from what I had experienced or whatever. I wasn't self-caring for myself, but I was always wanting to show up for everybody. And then there was this period of time for a few months where I didn't do anything with the podcast. I literally just kind of closed into myself and then started to do a ton of self-development and learning how to meditate and all of that sort of thing. So I'm able to be there for people. So it's what you're saying is just rings so true. I wanted to ask about, so your GIVE principle, what I do like about it is it's moment by moment, like you're saying, like I could do this whenever, because it's, yeah. I can only imagine losing a child. That's one type of coaching where I was like, oh, I couldn't do that. I don't feel like I would definitely need someone to help pull me out. From what you were saying, like I could see myself spiraling. If I lost one of my children, I would never stop being sad about it. That's just not going to happen. So I love this, that it's ever evolving and ever going. My question is this like a sequence of things once you start to feel you need it, or it's just a daily practice that you do grounding, intention, visualization, and then gratitude? It's kind of like a sequence of things you do?
Mm-hmm, yeah. So it takes about 10 minutes, maybe 15 minutes. I do it every day. And most people think, oh, I'm going to meditate when I have my Zen place and I've got my candle and my everything is like perfect. But let's be honest, we need meditation the most in the midst of chaos. You know, especially now everybody's homeschooling, right? Kids are all over, laundry's piling up. Everyone, you know, our new normal is new normal now prior to what it used to be. And so when I was doing this in LA, when my son was in the hospital, I was doing these GIVE meditations in the back of the Uber on my way to the hospital. I was doing them in the cafe at the hospital in the midst of all the people. I just take a minute, just close my eyes and then just go through this process. And I like to do them all together, but they're also, you can use them standalone. So let me give you an example. Yesterday, I started a new gym membership and it's kind of this circuit style workout where you go to different stations, right? So the very first station, you do it 5 times. And about the third time, I just thought I was going to die. We're like not even 6 minutes into the hour workout. And I'm like, I'm so dead. I don't think I can make it. When I started looking at all the other stations, I was like, oh, I'm packing up. I'm leaving. Like, I cannot do this. And then I remembered the GIVE principle. I said, just look at what's the next 5 seconds in front of you. Okay, I can do that. All right, what's the next 5 seconds after that? And I just thought, wow, this is such a life principle. Because sometimes when we look at the challenges around us, it's easy to quit before you even realize you could do it, that you can persevere, that you have resilience, that you have tenacity to make it to the next round, because we've already shot ourselves in the foot saying, oh, this is too hard, I'm just going to quit right now. The give principle, the grounding part of it, that helped me in that our gym class that I was like, okay, just look at the next 5 seconds in front of you. Okay, now do that and just stay right there. And then guess what? Another cool thing that I learned in that class is that when I went to the next station, just visually looking at it, I already was like, oh my gosh, that's so hard, I can't do that. But what happened was when I actually did it, I had different muscle groups that were nice and fresh, because the way that this class was structured is you go to muscle failure. So the first 5 sets that you do, you're using the same muscle groups, and then you should do it until you're completely fatigued. But when you go into the next station, you're using a different set of muscle groups that is still fresh. And so here, your brain is like, oh, wait, I'm doing this. So that builds confidence, and then that builds momentum. And then you're like, okay, I can do this, right? It helps you to move on to the next thing. And I thought, wow, that's such a cool kind of metaphor for life. When we think, oh, I can't do it. If we just look at something, we think, oh, that's so hard. But until we try it, we don't even know that we can do it. And so maybe things that are not working in our lives right now is because we have muscle fatigue, maybe emotional fatigue, maybe spiritual fatigue, whatever it is, and that you just need to do something different to build that momentum, to build that confidence, to try something new. So I don't know if that makes sense to you, but
it does.
It was such a cool eye-opening parallel to my workout yesterday that just had so many cool nuggets that I learned from, you know?
Thank you, gym class, because right? that totally made sense. And I guarantee everyone listening is like, yeah, I can totally see that. Oh, thank you for sharing that. That is awesome. Your book, Beautiful Tragedy, in that, do you also talk about the give principle, or is that more something that you do with clients in your coaching program?
So every chapter, I go through the give principle process every single day that I did in real time.
Oh, okay.
So gotcha. The first day we get the phone call, I'm doing the give principle in the car on our way in that 6-hour drive from Arizona to LA. And I'm walking you through, like, how did I process that? For most people, that's kind of a big question I get asked, is I can't imagine that car ride. Like, how did your family have that car ride for 6 hours, not knowing what was going to happen? And I'll tell you, it was staying present, staying grounded, not worrying about the things that we had no answers for, but just trusting and believing that right now, we know that he is in the hospital, he's alive, he's safe. We can be grateful for that instead of allowing our minds to let your imagination take you to dark places, which is what my default would have been in the past. It was really cool to just be, okay, we don't know what's going to happen, but right now we know what's in front of us and we're going to be present and grateful for that. And our whole family practiced that. And that was really cool. And there's so many great stories in the book that I'm really, really glad that I wrote it down, because I would never want to forget it. And like, for instance, one of the intentions for the day was called serendipity. Like, I'm very spiritual, so I'll ask the spirit for a word. Like, it's not just words that I come up with, like, I'll ask for an intention. And one day it was serendipity. And I thought, well, that's kind of a strange word to meditate on. Like, that's yeah. not even in my vocabulary. I literally had to look it up in the dictionary, because I'm like, what does that mean? Like, how does that apply? You know, I'm going to actually read a little excerpt if you don't mind.
Yeah, I don't mind at all. I do that too. I always ask messages from the universe, from the spirits. And I think if they were like, Felicia, serendipity, I'd be like, okay, I've heard that word before, but like,
right? Kind of like, okay, that's random. But this is what happened. It was on day 21, chapter 21. Jacob had already passed. And this was the day that we were on our way to the funeral home to pick out a casket, which no parent should ever even have to utter those words.
Yeah.
And so that morning, my meditation was serendipity. And Eric and I, my husband and I, were on our way to Forest Lawn in Hollywood. And I just remember feeling like we were in a twilight zone. Like, we were just numb. We couldn't even imagine and fathom what we were doing there. And if you have ever looked for a casket before, we had no idea. It's like going to a used car lot where there are hundreds of caskets on the wall that you can pick from, you know, anywhere from just, you know, your humble, normal casket all the way to this ornate, gaudy, gold, red velvet, the casket that actually Michael Jackson was buried in, $30,000, you know, so, and everything in between. And so Eric and I were looking at this casket. The funeral director was telling us about it. And he said, it's just a plain wooden box casket that a lot of Jewish people use because they have this belief that you came from dust, you go back to dust, and it's the most biodegradable casket of all the caskets, right? And it was super humble. It was just like this plain wood box. And for some reason, Eric and I looked at each other and we just knew, we were like, we think this is the one. We really loved the message behind it. We just felt like this was the one. And so I'm going to read this excerpt in the book. It says, we couldn't tell you why we thought this was the one, but there was just this strong feeling we both felt to choose this casket. Cannon, the funeral director, takes out his folder and walks closer to read the order number to write it down. You could only imagine the shock and amazement we felt when we realized the casket was aptly named the Jacob. The name of the casket was the Jacob.
Oh my God.
And we said, wow, are you kidding me? How crazy is that? The three of us stood there with jaws dropped to the floor in disbelief. We felt goosebumps all over. Serendipity. So that's why that word came to me earlier today. Jacob is too funny. Well, that seals the deal. If we had any doubt at all, Jacob just confirmed our choice. And so
I just got cold chills when you said that.
Isn't that amazing?
That is amazing.
I mean, we couldn't even make that stuff up. I'm like, really? You got to be kidding me. And so for something to be that, you know, for that day to be so challenging and sad and heartbreaking, Jacob just gave us a sign that he was there and that he was okay. And he even chose his own casket, you know? So there's a lot of really cool little stories like that in the book that just, it's heartwarming, it's tragic, but there's also just many gifts. I think there are so many gifts when you're looking for it that you will see. So,
yes, I totally agree with that. If you're just aware, if you're looking and keeping your eyes open and you're open to that, of course, you will see the messages that are trying to be sent to you. 100%. Yes. You don't have to answer this. I was just, I wanted to ask you, and if you don't want to, that's totally fine. You had mentioned that when you started developing this process and you're really excited to launch it, that you felt that something bad might happen to Jacob because something always does when you launch something.
Correct.
What do you think that is? That was just a very interesting comment that, as you're launching these different phases of your business, that something happens to your son, I'm assuming, because you had mentioned that. And with this particular one, let me see if I can articulate what I'm thinking. It's almost like he was almost a part of your work without you. Yeah. Okay. You're nodding for people that we don't have video. Okay, I'm trying to explain what I'm thinking, but
I love that you caught that, because that actually was, it's exactly what I said is, you know, here, Jacob did not derail this project. If anything, he propelled it.
Yeah.
He propelled it. And if you know me, and people that know me know, I like to start a lot of things. I'm not a very good finisher of things.
That's me.
And so for me to finish this book, that's a miracle in itself. But I really feel like it was Jacob's spirit and his guidance and his heart. And, you know, so many times I would write this book and then it was so raw and so vulnerable and so unfiltered that I would just be like, nope, not going to do it. And I could hear Jacob, you know, mom, pee or get off the pot. He was like, just do it. You know, I remember the day that my husband posted the book to get the pre-orders. And then as soon as he posted it, people actually started ordering the book and it freaked me out. And I said, no, turn it off. Let's return everybody's money. I'm not going to do it, because I was so freaked out. And so here's another incredible story. So once I got the manuscript back from the editor and I had to do the last final approval for it. It was in the middle of the pandemic and it was in my computer and I had to finish approving and I just could not open my computer. And I could not use the excuse that I didn't have time because at that time, all we had was time.
Yeah.
And I just, for some reason, was just resistant. Maybe it was the whole spirit, fear or self-sabotage or it's too close. I can't do this, right? So I was sitting there and I just couldn't open my computer. And I look over and there's this glass jar. And in the front of it, it said mom. And I opened it and it was from, it was a Mother's Day gift from when Jacob was about 10 years old. And when I opened, there was all these handwritten notes to me in this jar. And I just lost it. I just bawled for like 2 hours and I was in the backyard crying and crying. And then I get a text from a friend and she says, hey, I know this is probably going to sound weird, but I have somebody that has a message for you. Are you open to hearing it? And I was like, I guess. I mean, at this point, I'm like, I don't know what that means, but okay, you have a message for me. Okay, whatever, you know. So she gave this woman my phone number. Now, this woman has no idea that I'm trying to finish this book. This woman has no idea that I'm in the backyard crying for 2 hours. I'm having this hard time. So she calls me and she says, yeah, she says, I don't know if this is going to make any sense for you, but I think Jacob wants you to know something. And I said, oh, really? I'm like, what? What does he want me to know? And she says, he wants you to hurry up and finish because he wants his story to be told.
Oh my God.
Right? And I just burst into tears because I was like, oh my gosh. Even from the other side, Jacob is so pushy.
He's like, he's come finding on, people that don't even know you.
Exactly. Exactly. And so that, I mean, I stayed up till 3 a.m. that night and finished it. And that's when the book got published. So I don't remember why I'm sharing this story with you, but I mean, it's just powerful.
Yeah. It's just a part of how he's involved in your work and how he's really propelled you. And like you said, didn't derail your work. What was very much a part of your work.
Exactly.
And his story helped so many other people. Sorry.
Yes. Yes. And if you knew Jacob at 18, he was so authentic. He so walked to the beat of his own drum. He was an artist and he didn't care to fit in a box. Like he was so out of the box and just so true to himself.
Yeah.
And man, at 18, I'm like, I want to learn how to be like that. You know,
yeah.
I feel like that is the gift that he gave me, is that now I can do my work unapologetically, authentically, vulnerably, because he was my example of how to do that. And it's just such a beautiful gift that he's been able to leave behind for me. And I feel like, you know, my work is that much better now because I'm able to do it fearlessly. Because when you lose a child like that, I mean, it's like, what's worse than that?
I can't imagine anything being worse.
And I'm not challenging anyone up there. I'm not saying that as a challenge, but it's bad.
Oh yeah. We don't want to know what could be worse. Like,
exactly.
That was rhetorical.
That's right. That's right. But in the same time though, I really feel like there's so many gifts and so many lessons and so many things that I can carry on from Jacob's very short life. But I do feel like, you know, and he's told me many times, and I've had other messengers tell me this, that Jacob was only supposed to be here for that amount of time and that his assignment was over and he wanted to share that to the world. And so gives me a lot of peace. I say this a lot and I write about this in the book, is I don't live in the why. A lot of people, especially grieving parents, live in the why. Why me? Why him? Why did this happen? Why did it have to happen this way? And there's so much energy wasted in the why. And you can't change the why. What I live in is the what. It's okay, now what can I do with this? What can I do with his story? What can I do to help others? What can I do to equip others with his life, with, you know, his experiences? And so that's what keeps me going. And trust me, it's not like I wake up every day feeling like Superwoman and, oh, I can do this. It's a choice. It's a decision every single day because it is hard. it is hard. That grief, like I said earlier, is very unpredictable. You never know when the waves are going to come and totally knock you out. I was at a basketball court the other day, just going by the park, and I saw a bunch of kids playing basketball around ages 18 to 20. And it reminded me, like, wow, that's the age Jacob would have been right now. You know, he would have been 20 this year. And it just knocked me to my feet. And I went into my car and just sobbed, and it just totally without warning. You know, grief doesn't ask permission. Hey, is this a good time to come visit? is it okay to come, you know, bombard you with these feelings right now? No, I mean, it just came without warning. And I normally would have tried to numb out or disassociate or distract myself or do something to get me away from this feeling of grief. But what I'm learning with grief is that the only way out is through. Mm-hmm. And it's okay to completely feel that grief at 100% because it's not going to be forever. And I think that is a huge fear people have. I talked to a mom this week who lost her 19-year-old in a car accident. And she said, I'm afraid to cry because if I just shed one tear, I'm never going to stop. And that's a true feeling that many, many grievers have. And I just want to encourage you that I promise you, you will not die from crying. And it's healing. Crying is healing. Grief is energy, and it needs a place to go. So if you bottle it up, guess what? It's either going to implode or explode, right? And so we have all these walking time bombs walking around because people don't know how to process their grief. And so if I can just encourage all of us, and we're all grieving right now, grief is not just death. Grief is an end to a familiar pattern or behavior. And so when you think about, this is the first time we're experiencing a global grief, right? With this pandemic, like this has never happened before. And so life as we knew it pre-COVID is very different now. And there's grief, and what we can do, we start to minimize and compare. And then we start to feel bad because, well, it's not that bad. It's not as bad as what she's going through, or it's not as bad as, you know, this person over here. Like even our kids are now maybe having to be homeschooled, and they're grieving being at school with their friends. And so parents are going to be tempted to minimize, like, oh, come on, that's not big. You know, that's not a big deal. At least you have internet. When I was growing up, you know, we didn't even have internet. So you can start to compare, right? It's like when I was your age, I walked to school barefoot in the snow, you know, up the hill or whatever. We start to say these things, but that doesn't help anyone, right? And so what helps healing is having a safe place to be honest about your feelings and to have another human hear you without judgment, about giving you advice, about giving you answers, with trying to fix you, but a place that where we can just process together. And so again, I think that has been lost, because we live in this age where we feel like we have to fix and we have to have answers and we have to know what to do. It's totally okay to not know. And if you have a friend right now or a loved one that's grieving, they don't need your answers. They need a safe place for them to just process their feelings, to be heard and to be listened to with dignity and compassion.
Oh gosh, I love that. So I love all of that. You're absolutely right. That's something that I really had to work on. And when going through coaching training, something I had to work on and really pay attention to, because when my husband, my children, when anybody, when they're upset or frustrated or whatever the case may be, I immediately, my reaction is to want to fix it and to start, like, you know what I mean? And I have to consciously hold myself back and just be able to listen and be there for them. And if they need something, they'll tell me. But that's something that's so hard for me, or was so hard for me, that I'm working through. And I love how you brought up other people's experiences. I don't even know why, because I think a lot, I think too much. And I probably was thinking this in the shower, and I don't even know why, but I was thinking about how we minimize other people's experiences by not only, and this is something I talk about a lot with others, where they'll say, oh, but I mean, it wasn't that bad. Why am I so upset? Because it's not as bad as what they're experiencing. But then how worse are you making yourself feel by minimizing the pain that you're going through? And it's your life and your experience and your being, and this is how you're experiencing it, and you shouldn't minimize that. But then I thought also outwardly, minimizing other people's experiences, just like you said. So you have someone and maybe they're upset about this and you're thinking, oh my gosh, I love that example. When I was young, you know what I mean? Come on already. But that's not fair, because that's their whole being in this moment. And for them, this is, you know, traumatic or upsetting or whatever the case may be, whether you understand it or not, and to not minimize their experience. I love that you said that. And also live in the what. I really like that. I'm gonna have to think about that often. Live in the what and not in the why. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. And that's huge, because that's one thing I'm super passionate about is the power of your story and sharing your story and how that can help others heal, and it could do amazing things. And so I just really appreciate it.
Thank you. And vulnerability and authenticity is not something like you can read in a textbook, like, oh, here's a how-to. You know, it's really something that has to be modeled, right? And so I love what you're doing, because that's what you're doing, is you're modeling, you know, with the guests that you're bringing on, having this podcast, you're modeling what that looks like for people. And so when people start to see someone that vulnerable, someone that open, it gives them permission to be open themselves, right? It helps them to understand, oh, wow, okay, someone gets me. I'm not the only one. And there's so much power in that. And we need more of that.
Yes, we do. Yes. And especially because I hear this often too. So for example, you have created this amazing business, which I'd love for you to share the different things you do, but helping other people as a coach, and you've written this book, and you have come up with the give principle and worked through so much, and still you saw the boys playing basketball and you had to go into your car and cry. And that does not make you weak or make you like, who am I to be a coach, or who am I to be because I'm crying? This is okay to be. And people need to hear that, because they doubt themselves because they're feeling these feelings, or they're seeing this as something they're lacking, or that they're not developed enough, or whatever the case may be. So I think that's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, I remember some business coaches where, you know, and they're sharing out of their own lens, right? And so they were trying to give me advice and saying, well, maybe you're not ready to be out there doing this until you're healed, right?
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, kind of chuckling, because unless you lost a child, you know, that's not something you ever heal from.
Never. Wait, so I'm never going to do this? Because I don't.
But I think they missed the point that really, you know, I feel like my superpower is that I'm able to be out there in the moment to be able to be that vulnerable and authentic, so that other people can share in that experience and see it modeled and be okay with, okay, I'm going to have to hold myself up until I get healed, until I can live again, right? Which is kind of what those guys were trying to tell me, in essence. But what I'm doing is I'm stepping out into my life wholeheartedly. That means there's good days, and that means there's bad days. And you can't pick and choose. Wholehearted living means you feel it all fully. You can't fully feel joy if you don't fully feel your grief and your loss and your sadness. And we don't like that, because we live in this social media world where we're only showing all the highlight reels, right? All the good things, all the best filtered photos, but that's not real life. Real life is so dynamic. It's so diverse. And there's so much that encompasses our heart. You know, how boring would it be if it was just always great all the time? You know, like, it's part of life is having the heartache and having the grief and having the sadness. And, you know, they're all together. It's a package deal.
So
I love what you said. And some people might think that, but for me, I actually think that is my superpower, is that I can show up and be very real. And that allows people and gives people permission to be real themselves.
Oh, I love that. And for anybody who's like, no, I would rather just feel happy all the time. I don't want to feel sadness. And I disagree, because then why are so many Disney movies sad? There's lots of movies that make you cry and make you grieve while you're watching the movie for the characters in the movie. And we all love them. Okay. Maybe there's somebody that's like, no, I hate those movies. But, you know, I think I know I love, I love a wide spectrum of things, and I narrowed it all down to I love to be moved emotionally, whether I'm hysterically laughing or I'm crying or I'm happy, joy, whatever it is. I just love to be moved. So I think that's a lot.
Yeah.
So sure. I would love for you to share. So you have your book, Beautiful Tragedy, which I assume you can get anywhere. You can get on Amazon. You can get, you know, all over.
Barnes & Noble. You can get it on my website. Again, I'm so grateful that it's doing so well. It launched July 2020. So 7 months in, and I'm still, you know, selling books like crazy. But it's because so many people are relating to it. I mean, almost weekly, I get calls from, you know, parents who've either lost a child or they know someone that's lost a child and they want to get the book for them. So I'm happy that it's doing well, but I'm not happy why it's doing well. You know,
right.
Like too many people are relating to it right now. But yes, you can get it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or my website, judythurston.com.
Oh, I'm definitely going to read it. I think this is beautiful. And tell us about, so judythurston.com is where we can find out about your coaching as well. And what are some of the things that you do for your coaching, like the different services or programs, or what does that look like?
Yeah. So I do grief counseling. So I'm a grief recovery specialist, and I've been immersed in that world for probably the last 16 years. And I always say this when I do podcasts, it's funny, not funny, haha, but ironic, that sometimes you get the cure before you get the ailment.
Right.
So here I've had these tools that I've been helping other people with for all these years. And now I'm having to use those tools for myself. But there's a difference when you're helping people with a program and then being intimately having an intimate experience with what you're helping people with. And so as horrible as, you know, my experience is, it definitely helping me to help others in a more just intimate way. I help a lot of parents right now who are going through loss of their children.
Hey, you just completely, fully understand the experience because you've experienced it as well. I feel that way about, even though everyone's experience is different, people who have experienced child sexual abuse and the different things that they might be feeling. And I was talking to somebody about it and about my coaching business around that. And she stopped and she said, "Everything you're saying is resonating with me because I have experienced that as well. And I don't talk about it, but I have experienced that." And it was even, I don't know, there was even that connection and that power for me too, that I'm not just in this experience on my own. This is from me. This is how I'm feeling. These are the things that would feel good to me. And then she's like, "Me too." And that was just a really awesome moment as well. So I know what you're saying there.
Yeah. And you know, with my coaching, is I coach what I experience. So I don't coach studies or research or theory. Like, I coach what I've experienced. And you know, we've talked before, I've experienced quite a bit. And
yes.
So I help people deep trauma work. I help people with relationships. I help people with their grief counseling. I help business coaching. So I'm a little bit all over the place. And I call my coaching destiny coaching.
Ooh, and nice.
So what I do is I help people step into their destiny, whatever that is. And even more specifically, I realize that we coach people that are most like us, right?
Yes.
And so when I was trying to look at my profile, like, who are the people that are going to resonate with me? It's someone who's experienced deep loss, but that is resilient and wants to overcome, to step into their destiny, right? Like, having that deep loss sometimes is kind of our last straw of the things, the fear that holds us back. Once you've experienced a deep loss like that, you realize, you know what? There's no more time for hiding. There's no more time for living in fear. Like, this is my moment. You're intimately connected to death. I know that sounds morbid, but you understand, like, tomorrow's not promised. So whatever it is that you want to do, now's the time to do it. And so I find myself navigating towards people like that, and who want to really level up and get into whatever it is that, you know, they're calling, their heart's calling for their lives and their destiny. And so I love bringing out the best in people, and I'm not there to give people answers or tell people what to do, but I'm there to help them uncover their own superpower and their own giftings. And it has been super rewarding. I am enjoying it so much, and I, you know, only take on a handful of clients and have to be a good fit. And I've realized that the more inspired I am about my client, I show up differently for them. And I'm much more just effective in their lives if they inspire me as much as, you know, hopefully I inspire them. So it's just, it's a mutual sharpening relationship, and it's been really cool.
Oh, I love that. I've been noticing that, or learning or feeling that we have a lot of us, well, maybe all of us, I would say, we have the answers inside of us, even if it's like that calling that we want to do or what we need to do to take those next steps. We just might not be able to find them on our own or figure it out, or we're having trouble doing that. So working with a coach like yourself is very helpful because you can help them give these tangible tools like the GIVE principle, but also help them discover those answers within themselves so that they can live their best lives.
Right. Yeah. I always envision my perfect client as somebody who has all the puzzle pieces. You know, maybe they have like a 2000 puzzle box and they have all the puzzle pieces and they just don't know where to start. So they already have all the pieces. They just need help putting it together. And so I feel like that's where, you know, I shine, and that's where I can help people, is helping them get from being overwhelmed to, oh my gosh, there's actually a tangible plan here to get to the next level. And back to my gym wisdom from the other day.
This gym wisdom is awesome.
I know. I got so much from that 1 hour gym class. But you know, I am a fitness instructor and a health and wellness coach. And I refused for many years to pay for a gym membership or hire a coach or personal trainer because I have all this information in my head. Like, I know that this is what I help people do. But there comes a time when your own personal ideas, thoughts, insight, knowledge is not enough, right?
Right.
Like, you have all this information, but if you're not implementing it, it's not going to do you any good. And so I actually had to bite the bullet and hire a coach to help me get back into my health and wellness, you know, after losing Jacob and just going through so much grief, and I had injuries and I gained COVID pounds, you know, like just all the stuff where I'm just not feeling like I'm in my tip top shape. And I had to like hire someone to help me. And I didn't want to do it because in my mind, I'm thinking, well, I know this stuff, I shouldn't have to pay. But if you know things, but you're not implementing it, those are two different things. And that's where a coach really comes in handy, is because they're the ones that help you implement the things that you know you should already be doing, right?
Yes, they keep you accountable.
That's right.
Yes, absolutely. And also there's something about the different ways people deliver the information. Like I can hear I could hear many people talk about how gratitude, it's really important to be grateful. But every single person that shares that with me shares it in their own way that just makes it click, just makes it resonate a little bit differently. So all the different ways I'm hearing it are valuable. And that's just like always, I'm always constantly listening and absorbing different self-development, different, you know, positivity practices, all of this sort of thing. And it's always just the way that they're sharing that information helps it to just settle a different way.
Right. Yeah. And that's the beauty of coaching, is that it's kind of like dating, right? Like once you find the coach for you, it's going to resonate. You're going to feel it. You're going to know, okay, this is the one that's supposed to be helping me in this season of life,
yes.
You know? And so I love it. I'm so grateful that I get to do this right now. And it's filling my cup so much. It energizes me. I'm a people person, and being around people and connecting with people energetically fills my cup. Whereas I have a daughter who's very introverted, and her alone time away from people fills her cup, right? So it's cool even to have just really strong, you know, self-awareness tools so that we know what's going to be energy stealers and what's going to give us energy. And so I do a lot of coaching on that too, because I think most of the time we just don't know and we don't have that awareness. So that's very helpful.
Yeah, I was going to ask, so you do coaching on that, because I was going to say I for people who are like an introvert, I can definitely say that my cup is filled when I have alone time, when I feel really? Like I can read, when I can work on my own stuff. But I do love connecting with people, but I definitely know I recharge when I have my own time. And so you can be a person that is recharges in their own time, but still be someone that interacts with people in whatever it is that future you want to create. So you help people figure out like, this is the type of person I am. And
yes.
Okay.
I have this whole thing on identity that is so powerful and life-changing. I learned it 15 years ago and it has helped my marriage probably more than anything that I've ever done. And so I love doing that. And I usually start people off on that, you know. And sometimes we do like free workshops. So look, you know, come to my website, get on my mailing list, and we have a lot of free resources that we like to offer to people.
Oh, that's awesome. And where can they find you across social media and all of that?
Just Judy Thurston on Instagram, on Facebook, on my website. So Judy Thurston, allonewordcom.
Perfect. And I'll make sure I have all of those links in the show notes. And if you go over to the Here podcast Instagram page, you'll be able to click on them and be linked to them there as well. Judy, this was just such a wonderful, just like life-giving, beautiful conversation. I so appreciate you being here with me today. And I wanted to see if there was any parting words that you wanted to leave with the audience.
Well, first of all, thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure to get to chat with you. And I just love what you're doing. I love your energy and your purpose and your mission. So thank you for that. As far as last parting words, I just want to remind us that grief is about unresolved, conflicting emotions of an emotional nature. And so a lot of times, again, we're taught you're either going to be sad, you can't be happy, or you're happy and you can't, you know, like they can coexist. Yes. And a lot of times in grief, it does coexist. And there's kind of this myth or the stigma of, oh, you're a grieving mom, you can't be happy for X amount of, you know, months or years, because that's not appropriate. It's like, well, who said, who made up those rules? You know, and again, I share about wholehearted living. And so if I'm having a good day, I own it 100%, because you don't know when that's going to come right back around again. Or if I'm having a bad day, I own that 100% too, because, you know, the only way out is through, right?
Yes.
And so I just want to encourage us not to be afraid of your emotions. Feel it all 100%, work through it, find safe people in your community, share it with a trusted friend, a trusted advisor, and be very vocal about what you need. I share this and it's a little bit controversial because a lot of grievers don't like this, but I always say that it is the responsibility of the griever to ask for what they want.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so a lot of times we isolate and we, you know, we're mad because nobody's reaching out to us. First of all, nobody knows how to, everybody feels awkward. So they always say, oh, I'm going to give you space, or I'll talk to you later when you're feeling better. But the last thing a griever needs is space. What they need is connection. What they need is safe environment. So get away from your own awkward fear of connecting with people that are grieving around you and allow yourself to just show up for them. And if you're the griever, allow yourself to be open enough to ask for what you need.
Yes, I love that, because I know that I would, if somebody was to say, I need this, because I know if I see someone has lost their husband or I reach out and I say, I'm here for you, whatever you need. But I don't know what that is. Like, I don't know what I should do, but I want, really, truly want to do something. And the person will say, thank you. And then I'm really just hoping that they reach out to me and ask me for something, because right. I would love to do something. I'm just not sure. So I think that that's beautiful advice.
So on the flip side, so the responsibility is on the griever to ask for what they need, but the responsibility of the loved ones around the griever is to be proactive and anticipate okay. the needs of the griever. So when you ask a griever, oh, you know, I'm here for you, whatever you need. Trust me, the griever has no idea what they need in the moment.
Okay.
So be proactive. You know, maybe dinners are always great. Get a house cleaner for them, you know, gather the community, watch their kids, do their laundry, like little practical things. I'll tell you, I wrote it in the book. The first night we got to the hotel when we were in LA, you know, when we got to the hospital, one of my girlfriends never asked me. She just proactively on her own ordered bottled water, snacks for my girls, and little, you know, finger food stuff sent to the hotel room. And when I got there, it was there. And I'll tell you, like, that made such a huge impact because she didn't ask what I need, you know, what do you need? What can I do for you? She just proactively did something that she thought, you know what, this is going to be helpful for them right now. And I wrote it in the book because it made such a huge impact, something, you know, like just a small gesture. So don't underestimate what those small gestures mean to a loved one that is grieving.
I'm so glad you said that because I'm thinking of a friend who last month lost her husband, and it was someone who I had worked with. So I haven't seen them in a very long time, but I'm connected via social media. And I felt like that. Well, like, I'm not even sure. But as soon as you said that, all these ideas started to pop in my head and some little things that I could do that hopefully would be helpful. So thank you for that. I'm going to go do that.
Yay.
Judy, all right. I really appreciate you being on the show, and I know that your message is going to help so many. So thank you. Thank you again.
I'm always available as a resource. So if anybody wants to just contact me, I answer all my emails and I'm totally here for everyone. So thank you for having me. Hope we speak again soon.
Absolutely. We definitely will. Thank you.